I'm Dustin Zahn, and this is Trainwrecks. Shout out to anybody who's continuing to tune in weekly. If you dig in the show, please consider sharing it on social media. If myself or one of your favorite guests are in town, consider going to hear them play or picking up their latest record. And as always, any support is appreciated. Another note I need to mention, most of the new episodes have accompanying notes now. A friend of ours, Aaron V, he has been working really hard to provide a list of names, places, and things mentioned in the episode. So if you'd like clarification on something or want to research something a little further, be sure to check those notes out. They're available in the episode description on the website, Spotify, Apple, and just about any other podcast service that we've been using, except for SoundCloud. Thanks again, Aaron, and it is much appreciated. This week, Cynthia returns to the podcast. She's a very driven woman who has accomplished a lot over time. On top of her virtually lifelong DJ career, she has owned and operated multiple record labels, including Best of Modus, Unison Wax, We Are House, Best of Freunda, and her current baby, 803 Crystal Grooves. She also owns a record shop in Berlin called Elevate Selected Vinyl, where you can regularly find her and her lucky new husband Meet behind the counter. Stop in and they'll hook you up fat with house and house adjacent grooves that they're personally approving of. That shop's located on, I think, Gubernstrasse, just off of Warschauer. It's not far from Berghain or Tresor or Watergate or any of the countless great clubs in town. So if you're in town to check stuff out and buy records, pop in over there. Older fans might remember her from her first appearance 6 years ago. At that point, she had already been involved in the industry for a very long time, but she was also at the very beginning of breaking out on an international level. Since then, as a DJ, she's a mainstay on the house circuit. She released a DJ Kicks compilation a couple years back, which helped push her to even bigger heights. On the production front, she has released numerous EPs on her own label, 803, and for other labels like Aus, Shall Not Fade, and Heist. And in 2020, she released her debut album, Skylines and City Heights. Since then, she's also working on touring a new live show at the moment. I think that's particularly cool because live acts kind of, they seem to be slowly disappearing from festival lineups. And when it comes to female live acts, you especially don't see a lot of it at the moment. So if you don't know her backstory, but you think a lot of this sounds intriguing, be sure to go back and check out episode 47 first. We go in depth on everything there. And this time around, we're catching up on life over the past 6 years and chatting about house music in the year 2024. This Friday, July 12th, I'm back in Chicago. That's right, I'm playing at Smoke and Mirrors with local support from Jason Patrick and ChemX. I'm sure there's a Smoke and Beers joke in there somewhere, but I'll leave that one up to you guys. This one's interesting because I used to play in Chicago fairly often back in the aughts, but things changed. I think this is my second time back in 15 years probably, so it's pretty rare for me to come to town. That being said, I'm looking forward to it. I usually have a great time in Chicago. The people are a lot of fun. The food scene's killer. Although, fuck a deep dish pizza. I can say that confidently because it seems like a lot of Chicagoans will agree. But if you are a tourist visiting for your first time and someone lives there, make sure they take you out for it just so you can torture your friends a little bit. I personally don't mind it. A slice is great sometimes, but according to Reddit, I'm a boomer now, and that also means my metabolism isn't what it was, and something that heavy will just go straight to my ass. Speaking of ass, wouldn't it be great if you could levitate? Imagine being able to take your lazy, hungover ass to the refrigerator without ever having to use your legs. Imagine having sore, painful feet from dancing too hard, but you're so high that you're able to levitate above the dance floor. Imagine somebody corners you to mansplain cryptocurrency or whatever the fuck Terrence Howard has been going on about lately. Imagine being able to just look him in the eye and simply levitate away. Well, I'm telling you right now, you can. What you need is Tools for Levitation. It's my new collaborative EP I wrote alongside Zippo, and it's out now. It's 5 tracks of pulsating, esoteric club tracks, And when you sum the tracks together, you unlock the key to levitation permanently. With Tools for Levitation, you have the tools to ascend to the astral plane and smoke doobies with the gods. It was released on my label Enemy Records, and it's available now on Bandcamp, Beatport, in record shops, Spotify, you name it. July 26th to July 28th, outside of Minneapolis, Minnesota, we're doing a little three-day party called The Great Beyond. It specializes in psychedelic house and techno, and it's a nonstop party under the sun and the stars, and it features the likes of, well, a shitload of DJs. On the main stage, you can see Alton Boss, BMG, Centrific, Clarissa Kimski, Daniel Bell, Detroit Techno Militia, DJ Fatty, DJ Hyperactive, myself, GGFM, Lindsay Herbert, Lone Front, Lychee, Jay York, Neil, Overland, Paula Gania, Rue, Rodhot, Sandrin, Sean J. Wright, Steve Rockmod, a.k.a. Steric, Turnian Sound, and Wada Igarashi. If that isn't enough, we got about 70 other acts that comprise the other two stages, and the music never ends. This party takes place on a shaded oasis in the heart of farmland. This year's a soybean year, and you know what they say, never miss a soybean year. Speaking of farming and agriculture, listen to this shit our mostly fellow farmers have been dealing with in the area. So maybe you're not aware, but big tech is ruining farming. It used to be that a John Deere tractor, you know, the green and the yellow one, it was a sign of prestige and reliability. Well, in recent years, they seem to be pivoting from agriculture to big tech. The technology behind farming equipment today is nothing short of incredible. It does precision farming down to, I think, within a foot, so you're never going over the same land twice. Really wild shit. Anyway, unfortunately, it also means that farmers are dealing with a little exploitation. What's new, right? Much like the ice cream machine at McDonald's, shit is always breaking down, and the only way the equipment can be fixed is when you allow the company to do it. What John Deere are doing is essentially locking farmers into subscription services that require farmers to fork out massive, unsustainable amounts of money to stay afloat, and if they don't do it, they're going to suffer the consequences of having expensive, unusable equipment. Just in the last year alone, John Deere reported a profit of like $10 billion despite laying off 1,000 people. So family farming as you know it is over. You're probably thinking that's insane, but I thought you were talking about throwing a rave party. I am. Buy a ticket, come get high, do whatever. I don't care. It's going to be awesome. I told you that and I stand by it. It's just that, you know, it's a good thing to know where you're going and what's happening in the area. Anyway, there are about 100 tickets left for the festival. There's about 30 seats left for the airport bus. Yeah, that's right. We have an airport bus, and it'll pick your ass up from the airport on Friday and drop you off on Monday. You do not need to rent a rental car. I don't know what else to tell you. This is where you need to be this summer. Join us in the Great Beyond. For tickets and more info, check out www.greatbeyond.us. Okay, enough grifting. It's time to catch up with Cynthia. I hope you have a good week. Later. Okay, Cynthia, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Dustin. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me again.
No problem. Thanks for coming back. It's been a while.
Yeah.
I don't remember the last time or what year it was when we had you on, but it feels like
good question, but
7-ish years or something.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, let's check later because I think it's still on my SoundCloud. So
Yeah. I mean, you were just like really starting to pop at that point, right? So that would that have been around then?
I think so. Must have been maybe 2018.
Something like that.
Yeah, I think I just started the Crystal Grooves label.
So, you know, we did a lot of origin stuff and all that last time. We'll just do some catching up this time and see what's going on.
Yeah. What's been up in recent times? That's a good question. I think I did so much, especially in the last 2 years. I had the DJ kicks out in 2022. I think that was a pretty big thing for me. Then after, I wanted to give that some space to breathe. So, I mean, I released some stuff, but I was not doing like, you know, the big rollout and stuff like that. But now I'm fully back in the studio. Also, my label is back on track because maybe, you know, from during COVID, it took like a year to get your records. And yeah, that was not so much fun. But now it's back in full swing and also have a new release coming and everyone's excited about it. So yeah, I mean, at the moment I am concentrating a lot on making music. So because I said to myself, okay, it's something for me to have later, to have a good catalog of stuff, and then just trying to record as many royalties as I can. Also, it's a lot of fun, you know, creative music.
Yeah, I think everybody needs a creative output, whether it's music or some sort of arts and crafts thing at home or building something. You know? Yeah,
collecting stamps.
Something, you know. You brought up your label. So since we last saw each other, I can't remember if the label was just starting at that point, 803 Crystal Grooves.
Yeah, I think
I had other ones, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was just at the end of Besta Modus, and then I started the 803 Crystal Grooves. And I think when we met last time, I think I must have just released the first record. Yeah, I think, yeah, it must have been around that time. Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, the label is great. It's, I'm super happy to have it back.
And how many records are you up to on that label now?
Now the fifth release is coming out, but also I had six releases on the sub-label.
Okay, and the sub-label, for those who are listening, what was that called?
It's also called 803 Crystal Grooves, but then it's called Collective Cuts.
Got it.
Yeah.
And that was featuring other people as well, right?
Yes.
What kind of people can people look for on that label? Like, who are you hosting?
It's just mostly friends and like-minded people. So I had a guy from Brussels called UC Beats. He's like doing amazing underground music. Then yeah, I just had, for the last release, I had two guys from Amsterdam, Million and D-Stone. They're super young, super fresh. They make amazing music. And I think that's what I was always trying to do with the labels, you know, just showcase some fresh upcoming people, you know, they that maybe never had a release before or just have their first vinyl release. Yeah, it's just nice to find those people and just support them and then see how they kind of blossom after.
Absolutely. I mean, I kind of do that with Enemy. It's nice to live vicariously through people who are excited.
Yeah.
See, it's also cool to work with your heroes and legends and stuff, but a lot of those people have had a million records out, or they still like it, but they just aren't as excited.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not, yeah. I mean, I'm excited about every release, but then, you know, sometimes when you have someone bigger and you're like, oh my God, I'm so excited. And your voice goes up and they're like, okay, calm down.
Absolutely. outside of 803 Crystal Grooves, and you did the DJ Kicks, you had an album in 2020.
Oh yeah. True.
Which was, I wrote it down here, City...
Skylines, City Lines.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. You've been productive across the board. But one other huge project is we're actually sitting in your record shop right now.
Oh, yes, we do. Yeah.
That's right. Elevate here in Berlin.
Yeah.
In Friedrichshain, not far from Berghain or really a bunch of the clubs. So it's kind of centrally located.
Yeah, it's really nice. I think it's 5 minutes to Berghain and 7 minutes to Watergate. Or if you like concerts, it's also 5 minutes to Astra and some other clubs. Yeah.
Perfect. And for those who haven't been here yet, like, what kind of collection can they check out? If you know, what kind of records?
Yeah, it's mostly house music. Yeah, the record store is also called Elevate Berlin Selected Vinyl, which means I only sell stuff I would play myself. And that is mostly house music and also maybe some groovier techno, like, let's say, some stuff from Scutch or, yeah.
Cool. I mean, that's like a great way to do it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
A lot of record shops, you know, when I used to do the ordering for one, oh my God, 20 years ago, I would just buy a minimum of two or three of everything. And then, of course, the things I knew that would sell.
Yeah, of course. But. Yeah.
So, while we're on the topic of like labels and vinyl and record shops and stuff, it's kind of interesting that like on the last episode, I was talking to Perk, who's like kind of a hard techno guy, but he worked for Prime Distribution, again, 20 years ago plus. Mm. And we were talking about, you know, how vinyl sold way more copies back in the day and what's happening now. Like, basically, we kind of agree that in techno, like kind of your average break even somewhere between 200 and 300 copies for a record, and a lot of labels are lucky to break even,
yeah,
if anything. What do you think it's like for the house side of things at the moment?
To be honest, I think for the house side, it's a bit different because for house music, it's still, I would say, the medium number one to play. It's, I mean, techno, as the name says, it's more about technology, I would say. So you see more people using whatever, 4 CDJs, or you have someone like Chris Liebing having all these, I'm not sure if he's still using them, but these tractor controllers and doing crazy like things. And I think for house music, it's more about the vibe. It's more about people coming together, like having a block party, having a good time dancing. And so which is really good because, I mean, sometimes I have records here. I sell easily like 300 copies in the shop alone. And I'm not the biggest shop. Yeah.
Wow.
So, but these are the lucky punches, I would say. And also during COVID, when it all started, I was super scared. I was like, oh my God, maybe now I have to close because who's buying records because there's nowhere to play them. And but it was completely the opposite. People were crazy about buying records because they suddenly had all this money left. They would usually spend for drinks, entrance, let's call it gear, et cetera. And the shop was just exploding. And I had another lucky record. And so I played the first live stream. I think it was just 3 weeks, a month after COVID happened. And I played this record, which I bought a year before. It was like an edit between Spacer Woman and Laurie Anderson. And it was, just a mashup. And everyone was crazy about the record. And then, we just talked about Prime. And then my guy at Prime, he was like, oh, I saw you played the record again. We just repressed it. I saw everyone was going crazy about it. It was like, okay, send me 50 copies. And I was like, okay. I put them up in the online shop and it was sold out in 5 minutes. I was like, man, do you have more copies? I was like, yes, give me another 50 copies. So the copies didn't even arrive, but they were sold out in 5 minutes. And I have my Shopify app on the phone and like every 2 seconds I was making another ka-ching, ka-ching. I was so happy. And then, at the end, I sold the whole pressing in like 5 days and they repressed. And
wow.
Yeah, it was really the best seller. I think I sold, I don't know, 600 here in the shop. And it was...
Damn, that's awesome.
It was crazy. But this was also just a lucky punch. And I think the track was really catchy and how the mashup was done. And so you see, it can still happen with those records. And we had other records on which I knew the artists and I kind of had them exclusive here and I knew it was a big seller. And so I think we just need to dig and find those pearls and then...
For sure.
Yeah, it's going to work out.
And I think like also, I mean, techno and other genres, they appreciate classics too, all dance music does, but there's something about house music where they always continue to, like the classics will never go out of style, it seems.
Yeah.
And that, like, I would even argue that sometimes, especially like on the really big main stage, festival stage, they almost lean too heavily on it. Like they'll take like Hard Drive Deep Down Inside or whatever and resample that vocal again for whatever like big room house beat. You know, like how many millions versions of these do we need, you know?
It's always coming back. And then, you know, it's also as a label owner, it's really funny because sometimes you get demos sent from some really exciting young people that's like, oh my God, I found this amazing vocal. Oh my God, it fits so well. And you're like, okay, let's see what it is. And then it's like, lift me up. Or like, the one from Hard Drive or like in the beginning, that was Jack. And I'm like, okay, I never heard this before.
Exactly.
But that also means it's catchy and it's still working, you know? And I think this is also why a lot of people now are into this 90s kind of house or... I mean, mostly it's not 90s house. It's more like this 90s Euro clash trash kind of stuff because those records that worked before, I mean, they sold millions. They were only made to make money, you know? So, and of course, they are super catchy. They still work, you know? So that's also why we see a lot of those old vocal samples or remakes or...
For sure.
Yeah.
I always found it kind of interesting, like how... I mean, I guess, yeah, creativity is not a big part of music today, unfortunately, but like, there's not really many people that are going for, at least in dance music or specifically house, where they're like trying to make cool new vocal cuts or iconic hooks. Maybe prove me wrong. I mean, you're the one that would know. You have the background in it. But I'm not seeing a lot of like new modern classics with vocal samples or whatever that will stand the test of time.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's really hard to find them. And then also I mean, how they were sung in the past. You know, there was a lot of passion. It was a lot about, you know, love, and sometimes also how bad things are, you know. And especially the Dajay track, it's like lift me up, you know. It's like, okay, things are sometimes bad, but you know, with this track I'm gonna lift you up, you know. So things are differently. And now, I mean, I can't sing, unfortunately. I really sound like Kermit the Frog on ecstasy. So I have to use like sample packs and stuff like that. But sometimes when I listen to their vocals, I'm like, oh my God, this is so bad.
Oh, it's embarrassing to go through those kind of things, you know? It's like when they sing, it sounds kind of like a dude who's wearing way too much cologne, like trying way too hard and trying to be sexy, you know? And it's like, really, I think when it comes down to it, the best is when it's like unintentionally sexy, the track, you know?
So. Yeah, it is. And I mean, sometimes it's like, and also the lyrics, it's about like, let's go hand in hand to Wonderland. And I'm like, okay.
that's like, brutal.
I'm not sure if I want to use that.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're listening out there, find a friend that can sing and get them on and shit.
Yeah, I got some offers, yeah. But then the other problem is that, yeah, a lot of those people, they want to have way too much money, you know. They want to have thousands of euros, and it's like, it's an underground record, you know.
Yeah, I get it, you
I
know.
I can or give like, you a cut, but yeah.
Even then, like, the real good vocals, they want the cut, and then they want an advance and all that. And
yeah,
like,
true.
Holy shit, man.
Yeah, just so. For... two words phrase, it's sometimes a bit much, yeah. But I mean, there's also like clever sampling. It's like, how do you call it? Like stuff that Daft Punk did in the past. I mean, they sampled the shit out of everything, but how they put it back together.
Absolutely.
It's nice, or I'm not sure if I can say this. I mean, there's a track called The Funky Cold Medina, mm-hmm. and I sampled something from there once, and no one would notice it, you know. It was just like, you know, not doing the main phrase, but having like two words of the how's it called, the chorus, or you know, the bridge or whatever it's called. Yeah,
but I mean, that's what it comes down to, is like that's the creative side of sampling, is like jacking something, and it's like, if nobody knows, then you've done your job.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
like how many times can you just jack the whole phrase of a Lolita Holloway track, and then like, that's
true.
Your hook.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, badass, but like, you know, it's been done.
Yeah, but it's been done so many times. And yeah. And I mean, also with sampling, I'm quite careful, because, you know, obviously you don't want to steal someone else's work. And then also, you know, if you put it up on Spotify, it's there's definitely much better software out to detect this kind of vocals, and you don't want to have them taken down. So I'm super careful with that. If I'm sampling something, yeah, I'll just try to have something legal from a sample pack and just maybe try to tweak it so it sounds nice.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I actually had a question that I wanted to ask about a little later.
Yeah.
More in like the studio part of things. But, you know, while we're talking about sampling and whatnot and going after old disco records that have been abused a million times and whatnot, I'm nerdy, so I like to screw around with AI, and I always tell it to make weird songs and shit like that. I made a country album based on going out and partying in Berlin, you know, just stupid shit.
A country album.
Yeah. Well, because it takes like, you just text a prompt and then it'll generate shit.
Oh my God.
But I actually started telling it to do things like creating disco songs and like make something like Arthur Russell's Go Bang or whatever. And of course it'll generate something completely different. And it's kind of scary, like how good it's getting these days. But I feel like for people who really want to jack like disco licks and stuff like that, it's kind of a smart move, because all that stuff is just kind of bullshit. Not well, I guess in a way it's technically illegal, but like there's no label that's coming after you because they don't have a record of it, you know what I mean?
True, so
it's like
an
interesting way, I think, to like have a limitless source of disco samples or really anything.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I mean, you could make a disco track and then sample it. So pretty much sampling yourself and make a disco house edit of it.
Exactly. You know, stuff like this. So I don't know. Like, do you see that, like something like that becoming potentially a thing for house down the road?
Yeah, I would say yes. I mean, I think that people, they're always looking for faster, cheaper and easier ways to be creative. I mean, when you look at how it was like back in the day, so you really had to learn how to beat match with records, and that was, I think, a big a big thing for people, you know. Some of them that they didn't have the patience to do it, you know. Some said, okay, it's going to be too expensive. So there were lots of things that would move people away from like learning it. And nowadays it's super easy. I mean, this thing with the sync technology is made, and also, I mean, how's it called? MP3s or WAVs are way cheaper than a record. I mean, it's all good and it's nice to have it, but it kind of saturates the market a lot, because now it's like everyone can do it without putting a lot of effort in. And then of course you have people that they're like, okay, so now I'm DJing, but it's not really taking off. So I feel like I should make a track, but then, you know, making a track takes even more. You need even be more patient, because it's not like you start and then you buy a 909 and it sounds good, because the 909 sounds like a wet fart. You need to process it a lot. So that's something people always forget about. It's not that you buy something and you press a few buttons and you just mix it together. Or even with samples, you know, you can put them together, but you have to see if they're in tune and blah, blah, blah. So it takes some time. And I think with, how's it called?
Oh, AI.
AI, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
It has a different meaning. It has a different word in German. So with AI, I think, you just tell them what you want, and then you have your track, and then, you know, they release it, and then boom, if it's a good one, it can push you forward. Yeah,
I mean, that's the scary part, because on one hand, there's nothing stopping people from saying, make me a house banger, and then it comes out fully formed. But like I said, I like the idea of saying, generate some sample material for me. I'll create the banger, hopefully.
I should try it. I never did, but maybe it's nice.
It's fun. Try it out, you know?
Yeah, it could be fun. But then when you see, you know, I think there was a report about how many records or tracks are released per day, and I think it said like, 7,000. And I'm like, wow, okay, this is already super saturated, you know? You need to really pick out the pearls. And I mean, that's also why the record store is called Selected Vinyl. So we kind of doing the pre-selection for the people, and they like what I play also. I mean, now Carsten, my husband, is helping me with the shop, and so they know what he plays and what I play. So they really appreciate the pre-selection, so they know they don't have to dig through like 7,000 records.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, there's 3-4 bins here in a wall. It's not a ton, but it's like carefully selected. They're full, and like just looking around, you definitely have some classics and some newer stuff on here.
Yeah.
Actually, I asked you about a record on Instagram recently.
Did you?
Yeah. I'll look up. I can't remember which one it is.
Okay. I know. I think we're getting it back. It's from DJ Octopus.
That's right, yeah.
My brain works still.
Mine, I can't say the same. Especially, we're doing another one of those 10 a.m. interviews. So.
I also have problems to talk in English. I'm like, what is this word in English again?
You're doing great.
Thank you so much.
But anyway, so what else is happening in house music at the moment? Like, are you noticing any like obvious trends?
Yeah, it's coming back big time next year. All the techno
house
gone.
In general, or I'd be fine with a lot of techno taking a backseat.
It's definitely. I mean, house has always been there. You know, also same with techno. Sometimes it's bigger, sometimes smaller, and. But I think it's coming back. There's a lot of new house music producers coming up, and also a lot of people do some kind of, you know, crossover hits kind of. And then I don't know if it's a good thing. There's a lot of people that discovered the M1 again. So we have the classic organ in pretty much every track. But I think it's getting bigger again. And I think especially for the summer, it's just, the perfect match. And
totally.
Yeah.
I mean, during the day, like when it's summer out, I mean, there are other genres that work fine out in the sun, but that's kind of for me when I want to hear house during the day. And then when it gets a little crazy at night and people are a little effed up, then it's like, all right, let's bang it or do something else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But I mean, like within techno itself, is there like a certain subgenre or something you notice that you're really being like, wow, this is a thing at the moment?
Yeah, at the moment it's really popular to do some stuff like Dr. Banana is doing, or Interplanetary Criminal. You know, it's like really bassy, really garagey, UK garagey, like with like big bass lines and stuff. I think that's we kind of sell a lot of that stuff And then, of course, a lot of classics and stuff like that. But yeah, I think I like this trend. It's really raw and it's underground. Also, the scene is rather small. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice to discover some new artists and stuff like that. Yeah, I would say that's the biggest trend at the moment.
Okay. And do you have a feeling of where things would go next?
In music in general, or?
I think, well, let's focus more like on the umbrella of house music.
Yeah. Yeah, I think with house music, it's always a bit different to say. So it's nice to have it back. I mean, I prefer the more underground side of it, which is more like groovy. But then with house, there's always this really small gap, or how do you want to call it? You know, it's a house track can be super cool, but then when you move like 1 millimeter further, it can be super cheesy and super awkward.
Yeah.
So I hope house music is coming back, but I hope it's not going to be super cheesy. We're all like, oh my God, let's go hand in hand to Wonderland.
I mean, that's the thing, though. When you get a lot of people that come into a genre without having any understanding of the background, it's going to get cheesy. I mean, that's what happened to techno right
now. Yeah, true,
and
whatnot.
And, but, you know, that also means there's probably cooler stuff coming in.
Yeah.
You know, like recently on the show, I had Maria Montexier. She's playing a lot of vinyl house, in the house as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't get out as much these days. And if I do, like, especially for house, it's usually more at like Panorama Bar or something. And I was like, I think it's, I always feel like all these house DJs are just banging it hard right now. And she's like, think so? Like, she thought that it was still quite, there's times for it to be mellow, but to me, it feels like it's like almost techno leaning at the time.
True. Yeah. I think she played after me at, what was it, Sonar? Mm-hmm. And I mean, she played with More Alien, I think.
Oh, yeah. They went for it on that night, I think.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm not sure. I mean, I never had her playing live, so to say. But they started quite banging. And I was like, all right, okay, cool.
Yeah, it's been interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting. But, you know, it's also, you know, everyone has a different understanding of what house music means. You know, it's, for me, it's always the Chicago, New York stuff. Super uplifting and stuff, but then of course it's people they call this minimal house, or which is pretty
like
much minimal
shit.
Techno, you know, or you know, like back in the days when people called electronic music, oh, I'm listening to electro, and you're like, oh yeah, cool, some nice aux 88 shit, or some you know, these old school like proper electro acts, or Egyptian Lover, or Anthony Rota, some early stuff, you know. And they're like, no, I'm listening to whatever, Jamie Jones. I'm like, oh, this is not electro.
Yeah, exactly. Perhaps I'm wrong, but I also feel like, I've said this on the show before too, I sort of feel like there's hints of like progressive house coming back in a way as well.
Oh my God.
Yeah, which I'm like, I could never, I would like, whenever the first 32 bars, I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. And then you realize it's not going anywhere. And it's, if anything, it's going to lose energy versus add it, you know, but.
Yeah, true.
I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. I think it's getting, unfortunately, definitely more commercial because, you know, there's people they saw, for example, Peggy Goo blowing up with her crossover track, which was more like 90s Eurodance, whatever you want to call it. So I think that people, they go more and more commercial, because I also see this with sponsoring, you know, like everyone has a sponsor now, and I feel like, okay, are you even a real DJ if you don't have the sponsoring? I mean, it's nice, it's some cash, I totally understand it, but yeah, as an artist, you have to be sometimes a little bit against it, you know? Just not go too much with the flow.
Also, like, this music started off as counterculture music.
Yeah.
It's not really counterculture to do a Nike shoe or something.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if somebody, I was a sneakerhead for the longest time. Nike offered me a shoe, I'd be like, let's fucking go. So,
yeah.
You know?
I mean, I would probably be the same, you know, if Nike would be like, hey, cool, we give you a free sponsorship and get your ass off the couch and train a bit more. Everyone would do that, you know. It's like, let's be fair, you know, we all like, oh, we're super underground, and yeah, this music is about black culture and blah blah blah, but then if there's a big paycheck coming around the corner, we're all like, yeah, fuck that, you know, we just take it.
That's the music industry.
Yeah, it's the music industry.
For better and worse.
Yeah, you know? It is, yeah.
While we're still talking about house and stuff, like, is there, like, who would be one of your favorite house DJs to check out right now?
It's Lady Monix.
Yeah?
From Detroit, yeah. Okay. I love her.
You were just there for movement as well.
Yeah, for
4 or 5 days.
Didn't we see each other there?
Yeah.
On the streets?
We were at, what was this place called? It's some African restaurant. It won a James Beard Award. It's fucking good. So if you go to Detroit or you live there, check it out. I don't remember the
name. Was it Grand Boulevard? I think it's very close to Submerge, because we just came from this undercover music academy, which is run by Lady Monix and Vajit, which is next to Submerge, or like two houses next to Submerge.
Yeah.
So it must have been that. Yeah.
Fantastic weekend, though. You played a bunch, right?
Yeah, I played. Yeah, I was really happy. I was very proud of myself that I played for Smart Bar. Chicago, I mean, it's like my second home and second kind of family almost.
Was that the Tangent Party?
Yeah,
Tangent Party. How did that go?
It was really good. Yeah, it was really nice. I've never been at Tangent before, and it was...
It's a cool venue.
Yeah, super nice, and like, you know, underground and a little bit dirty and stuff, but amazing, and was a really nice crowd as well. Then I played... I think the next day I played some... First I was like, okay, are we at the right spot? Because it was pretty much a kind of a private house with another little house in the garden, and it was more like a kind of a garden block party, but it was so nice, you know. It was a proper, you know, house block party. It was sunny, like the crowd was super nice. I was like, oh wow, cool, this is really nice. Yeah,
awesome. Yeah, who was I talking to recently? There was somebody else on the show. We were talking about Detroit briefly.
Yeah,
and it's like there's all these big parties that are going off in Detroit, they're all usually pretty awesome or cool or done well with big lineups. But then there's like this whole other side of Detroit that a lot of people don't see, these smaller parties, which are like you said, block parties or house parties, things like that, garden parties. And that's like where a lot of the real Detroit heads are.
Yeah.
And it's, they really go off, you know?
Yeah, it's nice. I also played for Lenny Monix. She invited me for her Judy party. And I think it was also just around the corner. Let me check my phone because I forgot the name of it. It was at Spotlight.
Okay.
And that's also really cool because they have a record store. They have a bar in there. Also, they have... It was really nice. You know, it's like really a community place. So where people go, they do voguing. And it was really nice. And also was a daytime party, which is good for my sleeping rhythm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But it's different. Also, the Monica, she invited me to a barbecue, which happened to take place at the parking lot next to the Underground Music Academy. And it was really nice because then there was, suddenly there was Mike Banks, you know, standing at the grill waiting for his burger. And I was like, oh my God. And I was
awesome.
You know, I was getting started sweating. And I mean, he's a legend, you know, and it's like super cool, down to earth. And I was like, wow, this is such a cool place. And I mean, also when I left, I was like, wow. So, I mean, I've been in Detroit many times also for movement, but really there were some things, that really left me absolutely impressed and like mind blown.
Totally. Yeah. You know, and that's why I kind of wanted to lean in on that, because that's definitely existing. And people who go to, I mean, there's like I said, so much good stuff going on in Detroit, but if you really want to see, you know, Mike Banks at a grill or something, you got to go out and check out these other parties, you know?
Yeah, true. And it's really nice. Yeah.
And then also, you know, that's when you realize, Every city is different, of course, but I always say Detroit is really about the people. That's like the defining element, because like it's a cool town, but then I've been there 24 times in my life at least, and you really get to know the people, you know, like what makes them great, or what you got to watch out for, blah, 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 and then you're just like, okay, this is a different vibe that you're going to get than any other city in the States or pretty much anywhere, you know?
Yeah, true. Has definitely a different vibe. I mean, I was always a big Chicago fan because of the Chicago house music and stuff. But the more often I go to Detroit, it's like, yeah, this city is also really nice. You know, everyone's super friendly. And even with the Uber drivers, you know, like no matter if they were old or young, you know, they're all like, oh, you're here for a movie. Oh, so cool. You know, I've been like 10 years ago. I've been like 20 years ago. Oh, I've been like 30 years ago when it was all free. And, you know, they're all so proud of their city and what they achieved, not only with the electronic music, but there was also Motown, you know.
Oh yeah.
And all that stuff, and also Underground Resistance. I mean, they
for sure
changed the world. Yeah.
You know, and then like, I mean, there's still a lot of cool talent happening in Detroit. I saw somebody post something online recently, and it's totally true how they're like, you know, Detroit house gets overshadowed by like Chicago house,
yeah.
And it does. I mean, there's so many great Chicago house yeah. records, but still got people like Delano Smith, oh, Tally, all those kind of names.
Favorite, are just like, yeah, Norm is amazing, you know? Yeah.
They all make really cool shit. I mean, yeah. I saw Eddie Folks, well, when Output was still around, that was the last time I saw him, but he fucking ripped it up on the rooftop. And, you know, they're like, all these people still can rock it.
Yeah, yeah, they can, so. Yeah. I played in this outdoor garden party. It's called Foxglove. I played with DJ Sand. And I mean, okay. I heard about her before, but my God. That girl, holy, can I say shit?
Yeah, yeah.
Holy shit, yeah. I mean, it was an old vinyl party. And yeah, she played records. Oh my God, it was a girl. Where did you get them? And she was like, yeah, you have to go here and there, blah, blah. And it was like, wow, she was really good, you know. It's like she would put a lot of other European DJs to shame, you know.
That's awesome.
She was amazing, yeah.
Nice. Well, speaking of Detroit, are there any other cities or countries where you feel like really at home in the DJ booth?
Yeah, I think other cities is New York and Chicago for sure. Also LA, I always play for the Midnight Lovers. That's also really, really nice. Super underground, super nice, amazing people. But then when we talk about countries, I would say it's definitely France.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, because I think French people, they also have a good feel for like house music. I mean, they also have all these legends like DJ Gregory and who else was there? Yeah, my brain is empty.
I can think of a lot of names, but I don't know if they're necessarily from France. Like is Julien Jabre from France, for example? Or?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I think he is.
Anyway, I know for... Well, and then of course, all the obvious old shit, yeah, you know, like Daft Punk Cassius.
And Cassius, yeah. Etienne de Crécy. And I mean, even...
Bass, all that.
Yeah. And I mean, even when we did the... When we start the Best of Modus, I mean, this was like a big house wave. I think it started in 2010, 11 or 12. Mm-hmm. There was so much stuff coming out of France. I mean, there still is, you know, there's DJ Stu. He's like one of the best producers out there. And he does also mastering and stuff. And I heard from people when you give him the tracks, you know, he puts his sparkle on. It's like booming. And he has this label, Routilance. Thank God it still exists. But there were also people like... Why did we agree to do this at 10 a.m. in the morning?
You said that was the only time you had it today.
I think I should have had another coffee. There was also... okay, it doesn't get any better. Anyway, but there was like a big wave of like house music producers, you know, from different kind of labels, and that was really, really good. Yeah, unfortunately... There's not so many of them still doing a lot of house music. You know, some went to techno or some that don't produce at all because, you know, we all get older.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right on. And then when you hit these places up, what would you say is like the perfect set time for you? Like the length of time?
Oh, the length of time. I prefer to play longer. I mean, 2 hours is fine, but then quite often I'm like, I wish I could have played 4 hours. And then when I play 4 hours, I'm like, I wish I could have played 8 hours. And then when I play 8 hours, like, yeah, maybe 8.5 would be better.
I know how that goes once you get going.
Yeah.
But like, at what point were you like, okay, I think they're at least getting a good representation of the full Cynthia experience? Is that 3-4 hours? Or?
Yeah, I would say. Because people know me mostly for house music, and that's also what I mainly play. But when I play longer, I play all kinds of stuff. You know, I play also disco. Or I play even like a scratch record because, you know, it's like some groovy stuff. It's not really housey, but it's more like, groovy techno. And yeah, you know, just to keep it interesting, also play an acid track, you know. And the longer I play, the more, it's a bit like sport. Of course, you know, you have to warm up for like half an hour, and then
totally
you really showcase what you're able to do.
I mean, like even for me, granted, that's probably also part of my techno background. But if I do house sets or whatever, I sometimes really like to play house tracks but that are not really heavy on the vocals, because I feel like some DJs you watch where it's just vocal track after vocal track, like it's sort of the dynamic disappears. So if you play one or two whatever sort of beat tracks and then you drop the vocal track, the whole place just goes insane.
So you have to, sometimes you have to build up towards a track, and that's, I don't know, sometimes I think the people forget about that. You need to really let the people groove for a little bit, and then, you know, maybe just put the vocal in, you know, just a little bit, so that, like, oh my God, it's coming, you know, and then it's, and you're like, no, it's not coming, you have to wait, you know, and then just tease them, make them really excited. And then when it's coming, they're like, wow, cool. But it's very funny too, talking about vocals, because every time I play vocals, because Cass, my husband, he's not so much into vocals, and every time, you know, I play it, he's like, oh my God, not again.
But you play with them quite a bit now, right?
Yeah.
Like back-to-back sets?
Yeah.
So what, like, I actually haven't heard you two play together yet. I've heard you play, like, what would people expect when they see that happen?
I think it's, we have a pretty similar taste. Of course, I mean, I'm a sucker for big vocals. He's not. He's a bit more into this, like, groovy, minimal house kind of stuff. But, yeah, I love to play with him because he's got such a big record collection. You know, he would slam in an old 2020 Vision record and you're like, wow, what is this? And I was like, oh, this one, okay, cool. And, you know, I try to Shazam it.
There you go. I mean, I think there's a lot of DJs out there who really would be into the idea that their partner could be someone that you just sit at home and play records with, or even go out in the club and do it. And then there's others that are like, no, I want this for myself. I like the idea of, like, being able to have that conversation at home while making dinner or something. Yeah. Or, like, you know, like, one of you plays a record, the other one's like, I think I'm going to snatch that one for my gig tomorrow.
Yeah, we always do that. And, I mean, obviously, we have the record store, and then sometimes there's records coming in. It's like, wow, this one, you ordered this. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, wow, I'm going to take one. It's so good. And also, a lot of times, he's going to send me stuff, and he's like, wow, I think we need this record. I'm like, oof, yeah, of course, like, order a whole box, because this is, like, killing it. And I think this is really nice. And also, there's no competition. Because, you know, sometimes people ask me or him, it's like, oh, how's it with your husband? Because obviously he's not playing that often, you know, but still he's successful with the stuff he's doing, you know. And he's like, no, I don't care. You know, it's good if my wife is successful. You know, I don't mind. He's not that kind of person. And it's really funny that we have this same kind of background, because he had Freebase, the record store, which was super famous in Frankfurt, they opened in 92.
He owned it?
Yeah, he owned it.
I didn't know that. Okay, yeah. I have some records from there. Crazy.
Yeah, he owned that. And I mean, they started with a bit more punk music and electronic music, but then, like, after a year, I think they shifted over to electronic music because it was popping, like, back in the days, and, like, everyone bought records from him. And sometimes it's really funny, because when we were talking about some tracks from me, and I think, yeah, because the first Crystal Groove was super housey and disco-ish, and the second one was more, like, I would say, proper raw Chicago stuff. And he was like, yeah, this is cool. And I was like, yeah, I got inspired by Steve Poindexter. And I was like, do you know Steve Poindexter? And he was looking at me, and I was like, oh shit, yeah, of course, he knows him. You know, he was selling loads of his records in the shop, but it was just when we started dating, I was like, yeah, of course he knows. I was like, I'm stupid, you know, but it's cool to have these conversations about these people, and sometimes you would play something and say, oh, this is an old Relief record, and it's like, oh my God, I have a second brain now. It's so good.
But where it's like, you know, like, maybe you pick out a record and he might be like, who are you even? Like, do I even know you? Like, what? Why are you buying this or whatever? You know what I mean? Yeah. You're like, the tastes do not align sometimes, or?
Let me have a think. No, so far we are good. Yeah. I mean, there's only one record I played once, when I played, I think it was the second slot in Panorama Bar, and it's an old classic on Masters at Work, and it starts with the vocal, like, really, like, wah, wah, wah. Obviously I cannot do it. And he was like, wow, that was cheesy as fuck. But I thought it was a great opener, you know?
That'll happen, though. I remember I was on a little road trip with my girlfriend. She basically, what's cool is she'll listen to whatever I want to listen to, and she likes it. The only thing in my life that she ever made me shut off was U2. She's like, no, just hits the button. Okay. Like, this isn't fucking happening.
Yeah, true.
I was like, all right.
True, yeah.
This is not a U2 car.
I agree with that.
What about your record collection? Is there something we'd be surprised to know that's in there? Like some sort of genre or little...
Sorry, what was the question?
Like, in your record collection, is there, like, a little chunk of it that we'd be surprised to know about? Like, drum and bass or trance or something?
Yeah, I think we talked about this before. You know, I had my secret Pandora's box with a bunch of, like, old Frankfurt trance records, which I thought, I'm just going to throw that away, you know? And then we opened it and checked on Discogs, and it's, like, worth 50 or 100 euros. And I was like, okay, you know, I don't know.
Coming soon to Elevate Records.
Yeah. And I don't have much other music in my record collection. I mean, I have, if my brain would work this morning, I could tell you some stuff. No, I have a few hip hop things, you know, drum and bass. I was a big drum and bass fan back in the days. So I think I also have like maybe 200 drum and bass records, also like breakbeats and other kind of weird stuff, like stuff from Fingerlickin'. Yeah. Or there's also another guy from the US. It's DJ... whatever.
Moving on. That's all right. So we already touched on it earlier. You did your first album in 2020.
Yeah.
You had a couple EPs out last year on Heist and Shall Not Fade. You said you were working on stuff. I mean, do you have... What's the plans for the future that you can share anyway?
Yeah. So obviously I have the next Crystal Grooves coming out this month. We are now in July. So depends when the podcast is out.
Monday.
Okay. End of the month. Yeah. You're that fast. Wow.
Yeah. I got to crack them out right now.
Okay, so. Cool. Awesome. Then there will be a follow-up on Oz Music. I think I can also say this. Yeah. Then also I'm working on a follow-up for the Heist EP. And then ideally this all leans into the second album.
Okay.
Yeah. And also I recently started playing live. So that's another cool thing for me now.
That's what I wanted to ask about. Let's just jump into that.
Yeah.
Basically, I haven't seen it yet, but I've seen a few videos.
It's amazing.
Let's talk about, well, first of all, like the gear that you're using for that set. Is that all right?
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah.
So what are you using?
Another dark chapter of my life. So now, I mean, it's not the final thing. So I already kicked some stuff out. So I have my computer, of course. I have the APC 40 to play the clips. Then I have a drum machine. I believe it's the Roland TRS. Mm-hmm. 8S, sorry. And then I had a, you know, like a Behringer bass, and it's a replication of the Mini Moog. So I brought this. So honestly, it was very funny. I was very too excited. So I had my first live set, and I was practicing in the studio, and obviously you have all this amazing gear, mostly the original stuff. And then I was like, hang on a second. So when I play live somewhere else, I would need to bring some of this stuff. And then I tried to put everything in a case, and I was like, okay, this is not going to work. Also, it was the weight was like 2,000 kilos or something. Yeah. I was like, okay. So when I played first live, I was like, okay. So I brought my push, which was super heavy, and I just had a computer. Played the first live, it was like, oh, this is fucking boring, you know. But I was just happy that nothing was crashing. Then also because the tracks are not mastered, so you need to make sure they sound dope. So that was all good. And I was like, okay, now it's about bringing other gear, and I think I'm happy with the drum machine because, I mean, I have the original one, but I would never bring that because you never know if it gets stolen or someone spills a beer on it. I want to bring a MIDI keyboard to be able to play more stuff like really live. I was thinking also to add like the boutique Juno replication.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like I'm getting more confident, and then of course I'm more confident with doing different kind of things, and then
For sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think also building up to whatever it's going to be is always the smartest move too. Mm-hmm. Like Lady Starlight, she does a lot of live sets.
And
she said something that, I don't know if she said the saying or surgeon, but like, we'll just say that she said it. And she was basically like, whenever you go on stage, you're 50% more stupid. Like, yeah. In the sense that it's like at home, everything works good. And then you get on stage, you're like, now what? You know, even though you've practiced it 100 times at home.
Yeah.
Because you just, it's, there's something about all that excitement and being in front of people.
True. Yeah. And I mean, with the APC 40, so I pretty much click on the next scene and then some stuff I do myself. But then, I played at Fusion, I played live, and then, I don't know, it was so small, you know, and it was so sunny, I had really promised to see the screen, and then there's some parts I'm like, okay, I just played this part twice because it's really good, it's really uplifting, and I just clicked the wrong button, I was like, oh, okay, so from the energy was going like back to the stage where it didn't have so much energy, I mean, no one notices, but it's like, ah, damn it, you know, I could have killed it even more.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I think it's, you know, everyone is always asking me about, oh, are you nervous? Or, and I'm like, no, I'm never nervous. I'm more like excited, you know. Nervous for me, it's more like shitting your pants. But being excited, it's more like, okay, are the people liking the stuff I prepared for them? So it's, I'm more like, okay, I'm more excited to see how it goes. You know, if I fail or if I have the hands up on the dance floor. So, and also it's nice to make mistakes because it's like, lets people know that this is a human being playing there, you know?
I mean, if you go to see like any sort of concert, that it's always often pretty raw, you know?
Yeah.
Like even really solid, tight players and whatever.
Yeah.
But that being said, like, have you run into some pretty crazy technical difficulties yet or not really?
Yeah, unfortunately, it was a little tech issue, but I'm not sure what it was. I played a big festival. And everything was super good at the sound check, like, wow, was amazing. And also we checked on the dance floor, on the stage, blah, blah, blah. But then when I came back in the evening, something was wrong. And I tried to fix or locate the issue while I was playing because it sounded like there was one channel was louder than the other. So I believe it's it was a wrong cable or something. So while I was playing, I was like, oh, okay, checked everything, you know. And I mean, it was not pissed or something. I was just like, oh, why did this happen? Because it was a super big stage and I really wanted to kill it. And but I could hear in the monitors that there was almost a light distortion on the channel that was louder. But I couldn't find the problem. So everything is fine. And then also when I played Fusion, I played with the same setup and everything was good, you know. So must have been maybe
cables
from,
or something.
Yeah, from there, or it was not 100% plugged in because you know how it goes there. Sometimes prepare the live acts in the back of the stage and then they just move a table over and they freshly plug you in. Maybe there was some kind of dust, whatever. And I was like, ah, you know, it was the first time. But I mean, otherwise, you know, when I played the really first time, when I only had the push on my computer, I was like, this is super boring for me. That was the first thing when I, but it was not so much an issue. It was just a debate with myself. Okay.
For sure. I mean, it takes time to figure things out.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't done a live set for a while. I was on the road with a band last time I played live and I took out the push and I used that for like half the tour. And while that as a piece of gear, I think it looks cool. I think it's really handy and whatever, but yeah, it didn't really allow me to do enough. So I actually just took everything, resampled it, threw it on a Digitech with some pedals. And like, to me that also made more sense with the band rather than a dude hanging out with a laptop.
you know? That's true. Yeah. But it's nice, you know, it's like a learning process. And, you know, after all these years, you know, doing records and making music in the studio, it's for me the most logical step. And it was also something because with, you know, don't get me wrong, I love DJing and stuff like that. But you can also wake me up in the middle of the night, give me two records and I can do it. So it's with playing live, it was a new thing for me. And it's nice to... it's like the learning process is the most exciting thing about it. So, and also you always see other people, for example, Session Victim is also an amazing house live act. They played, I think, two or three slots after. And I'm like, okay, how are you doing it? Because obviously the tracks are not mastered. So Hauke, one of the guys, he gave me some tips. And then, of course, I saw the live act of Frank Wiedemann and Matthew Johnson, which was really nice because they brought a lot of gear, you know, pretty much a lot. And, you know, maybe I'm just going to send them a few questions and, you know, just see how they are doing it. And always trying to take the best thing and add it to my live act, you know, and just maybe one day I'm going to be the next Octave One.
There you go.
I'm going to be Octave Two.
C4.
Yeah, but you need goals, and you know, it's just something. Of course, you want to get better and learn more, and you know, really kill it. And so you always need goals. Yeah.
Yeah, because I was going to ask if it unlocks some sort of new excitement compared to DJing, and it sounds like it has.
Yeah.
So if there's a future for your live sets, would there be like another way you want to approach it? You said maybe be Octave 2. but I mean, would it incorporate more gear or maybe a partner to play other parts with you live or instrumentalist or something? Or?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I mean... after Fusion, I had the when we saw Matthew Johnson and Frank Wiedemann playing. I think I was also talking to Vriel because he was also playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just a lot of like nerd stuff. And I don't know, someone came up with the idea, yeah, maybe you need a partner. And I'm like, oh, cool. So I was looking at my husband, like, hey, that could be you. And he was like, no way. Because he always gets very nervous. I mean, even though he's also playing for such a long time, but he also has this excitement, but then. Yeah, he's definitely way more nervous than me, but more in a cute way. You know, it's not that he's like he's shy more than anything. It's not that he stops breathing or something, but it's, you know, he's excited to play and also a bit like, okay, how does it go? But he was like, no, I think this is not for me. But yeah, I mean, it would be nice, but ideally, I want to bring a bit more gear and to make it real. And maybe also do it, you know, like King is doing, because he's really doing, he prepares his stuff, but then it's more like, you know, he does stuff on the go, you know.
More spontaneous,
you know, I want to do this. And also I took piano lessons so I can at least like play maybe one chord and then transpose it and it sounds good or whatever.
Yeah.
But I was also thinking maybe my goal would be to do a live set at Panorama Bar, and I'm quite sure if I would ask, we could do it. But then I think because it's in Berlin, I can, you know, bring the original machines and then just...
That would be pretty tight.
Do it really cool. Maybe have someone singing, you know, like, you remember the guy Albert Vogt? You know, I did the first ballroom. You know, maybe someone like this and make it really special, and because it doesn't really exist anymore. Like a live act made by a woman and then a guy singing, you know, it's like...
That's why I brought it up, you know, and I have it at the top here. I just said, it just says there aren't enough women doing it or talking about it, especially with the live sets. I mean, now, thankfully, there's always been a bunch of female DJs, but there's more of a spotlight now for them. And I think there's even more coming up because they see that it's possible and they want to do it. And I think with the live set, too, if they're like, oh, wait, yeah, I could also... You know, I'm a woman and I can be someone who's performing this live. Yeah. Like, it's just not happening almost ever, you know? So I think that's really cool.
Yeah. And I mean, with me, it's like I'm turning 44 this month. And it was totally different when I was like 18 or 20 when it just started out, because I was obviously insecure, you know, about what to do or is it good enough. But now it's like, I don't really give a shit anymore. You know, it's like, of course I make mistakes, but it's, you don't learn anything from not making mistakes. So even if I'm on stage and something sounds a bit odd, I'm like, okay, fair enough, it wasn't so good, but then I have something to work on or to make it better or try things out. And I think people nowadays have always the in mind that everything has to be perfect, you know, because you get filmed and it's this and that and you want to have the good footage. And it's like, no, it's not, you know. You need to, only when you make mistakes, some new things can develop. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
People also like the humanization aspect of things too.
Yeah.
You know, like there's actually last week's episode was, I had Matrix Man. Do you know Charlie?
Matrix Man. Yeah.
Yeah. We were just clowning, talking stupid shit and like got a ton of feedback on it. People love that stuff because people do appreciate when you let your guard down a bit and just be real, you know?
Because
if it's like, people are so used to seeing polished things. Yeah. So when it's not polished, it's like kind of jarring for them. Like, exactly.
Person, yeah. I mean, my Instagram is really funny. I mean, I never, you know, when we do some kind of announcement videos or even in the studio, when I do like my funny studio videos, I'm like, okay, I could record this like in a high class thing, but then I'm alone in the studio. I have no one who's taking the pictures for me. And then I'm recording it and I'm like, okay, I make a funny face, but fuck it, I don't have time to do it, you know? And it's like, you know, people like it and I think it's a bit more authentic. And I think especially for, younger woman, it's important to have this. I mean, I see with my daughter, she's turning 15 this year, and it's so I see things a bit in a different way. You know, I want her to grow up and have like good idols and not be like, okay, people only love me if I have fake lips and fake boobs and stuff like that. They need a real power woman.
Absolutely.
Planet, yeah.
There's I was having some lunch with another female producer the other day, and she was talking about how her and her friend, they're really focused on doing these videos, and it's not, it's like actual gear videos and like stuff that they take seriously. Mm. And they're kind of like giving me shit. They're like, you have to do this, because I don't even know how to check my, I just learned what insights are, like how to,
oh yeah,
you know, what videos. And they're like, God, you act like you're so old sometimes, you know. But they're like, this is important. And I agree, especially again, for highlighting the fact that women are capable of doing these things, and they do them. Mm. You know what I mean? Because if it's out of sight, it's out of mind.
Yeah, true. So. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I also wanna do this a bit more with because people are always asking about workflow and stuff. I'm like, yeah, I really wanna record something. And even though it doesn't have to be like super high class, it needs a bit of preparation. And now, especially summer, it's like so much touring. And but I'm trying to take maybe the January off again, and then do it. You know, doing a little like basic step-by-step walkthrough. And I think it's really interesting. It's also good maybe in the times of Instagram, where everyone is making a big thing out of every wet fart. Mm-hmm. It's good to give a bit of like good content, you know.
Absolutely, yeah, 100%.
Like, yeah.
So from a booking perspective, you know, how has the response been for the live act? Like, are promoters, is it a hard sell to these people, or are promoters pretty engaged with it?
No, I think it's really good. People are really engaged with it, but then obviously I don't want to do it too often, because obviously I have to constantly make new tracks to add, which is of course possible. But so last year I think I did it 8 times, and it was really good. But then of course, like every year, you need to completely make a new live set, or even every 2-3 months you need to add more tracks. But it's cool. I mean, it's something different. And also, let's say for whatever, a festival where you already played last year, so they don't really wanna, I mean, some festivals, they don't wanna book the same.
They don't wanna repeat shit.
Yeah, they don't wanna have the same lineups like every year. And they're like, okay, you played last year, so it's, let's say like Nation of Gondwana, you know, they have this thing, which I think is really good. They're like, okay, you played last year, so next year we give other people the chance, and then you can come back, which is fair enough. I think it's really good. But then it's, you know, possible because it's not a DJ set, so it's technically not the same thing.
Yeah.
So you can play again, yeah.
What would you say, like, are the pros and cons between DJing and playing live?
Oh, playing live, I have to carry so much stuff. Also, when I DJ, I have my record bag, which I can take in hand luggage. But then now with the live set gear, I have to check it in, and I'm always a bit like, okay, let's see if it's arriving. And yeah, so it's a bit more... I don't want to say nerve-wracking, but it needs more preparation, and it's a bit more like exciting, and hopefully no one's gonna lose my stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. I would word of advice is like try to make sure that the most important stuff are in a backpack. So
yeah,
like if something doesn't show up, the show can still go on.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe, I mean, I have the laptop, obviously, but yeah, maybe, or maybe. Maybe I should get some smaller gear. I think there's this Teenage
Engineering is a company. They have they have a lot of smaller things.
I think they have super small stuff, but I have German sausage fingers. So
yeah, I mean, I think they're good people, and I think from a design perspective, this stuff's really cool. I think it would be kind of hard to use some of it in a live setting, unless they have like the OP1, which is that keyboard. But that's like.
Yeah.
For I think it's better off for people who like know how to play as a musician.
Yeah, that's
like,
true. Really, yeah. You know. It's the white one, right? The
OP
one.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think I saw Stimming doing a live set the other day, and I bought his mastering box.
That thing's awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah. So he was at Watergate, and I bought it, and he was like, "Yeah, if you have questions, I mean, I do the Watergate. I just come to the sound check, and I explain you some stuff." And was like, "Yeah, super kind." So I went, and then I saw his live. So he pretty much came with a tote bag and has his gear in there. I was like, okay, is there more stuff coming? I was like, no. And everything is like small as a cigarette package, you know? And I was like, okay, wow. So you're getting smaller and smaller. it's, I mean, but he's a nerd, so it's cool for him. But I was like, okay, I mean, I would be scared to like touch it.
Yeah.
And then just break the knobs.
I just broke an effects pedal yesterday or the day before, and I've had it for less than 6 months.
Oh, shit.
And then that was a replacement for the last one, so I think I'm done buying that brand.
Yeah.
Anyway, while we're still talking about nerdy sort of gear stuff, real quickly, a couple other questions. When it comes to having a label and record shop and everything, you see a lot of music come through. Is there a certain thing that you notice from producers that we're like, oh man, this is a common mistake I see every time, like whether it's the sound quality or the vocals too quiet or any piece of advice you might be able to give?
Good question. Good question. I mean, sometimes what I, especially with new people, sometimes I feel like it's missing a little bit of groove, how the drums and the bass is played. Yeah, I would, I don't know, give the famous sidechain a tip maybe. So yeah. It's ducking a bit more. And then also, you know, it's like also when you think about a human drummer, it's never drumming the same stuff. So you need a bit of like groove from Ableton's groove pool, or just move the heads around a little bit. So yeah, that's something, but it's only with like very new producers. The rest, I have to say, like the producer game is really at the top at the moment. But also I have to say, and I realized this, especially in the shop, I would say 98% records are from guys. So now, yeah, so girls, send me
it's
some
time
stuff.
To start. Yeah, send her music. It's time to get going.
Yeah.
So when you sit down to write a track, though, do you enter the studio with a certain idea in mind, or do you kind of just throw things at the wall to see what sticks?
Yeah, so most of the time I would say I have an idea, but then in the rare times I have no idea, I always switch on the 909 and do a simple groove, and from that groove came all grooves off. No, I think this machine has its own soul, you know, and when you do a simple like drum pattern, you could always already like feel some kind of rhythm, and then I try maybe some toms instead of a bass line, and then I'm like, oh yeah, this is cool, and then I try to replicate the toms with the bass line, and then from there you almost have the chords, you do a high string, and then you're pretty much there. So I would say, yeah. But then at the moment, because I'm writing the second album, I'm trying out a lot of other stuff, maybe also some, you know, broken beats with the 808 and stuff, and it's nice to get out of the comfort zone sometimes. And yeah, but I would say most of the time I have an idea, and then I make the track and it sounds completely different. But
that's at least starting with something.
Yeah.
And I know, I mean, you're definitely a busy woman. You got hats in all sorts of areas. So like, I know that you kind of got to get in and make it happen and get out. So
yeah. Yeah. That's the only thing I'm really kind of sad about at the moment, that I have this amazing studio, but there's not so much time, which is complaining on the highest level, I think, because it's good to have gigs, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But sometimes traveling, it's tough, but, I try to make time as much as I can, because also I realized, especially in the last month, that the world outside is pretty pretty loud at the moment, and sometimes you really need some quiet moments. And in the studio, it's really okay. Put the phone on silent, and also my booker knows about it that I'm in the studio, and so urgent questions have to wait. And that's really nice. That's really calming me. Also with the touring schedule, it's really nice to, and it's also good for your own self confidence. It's like when you finally discover a trick they made like back in the days, and you're like, oh, this is how they made it, or this is the sound they used, or oh, this is where the sound is coming from. It's like, yeah, nice one.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cool. Let's switch gears a little bit here. You said that you've been pretty busy over the years, and you have a daughter, recently married, stuff like that. Is it still important for you to hit the clubs?
Yeah. I mean, luckily I have a husband who loves going out. We always make the joke, or he always makes the joke, like, I love parties. And yeah, that's true. He loves going out and be social and stuff. I love it too, but I have to, and I love to go out, but I have to say sometimes it's a bit hard, because Sometimes you go somewhere and you know so many people, especially in Berlin, and you end up talking the whole time, which is of course nice. Also complaining on the highest level. Oh my God, I'm so famous. No, I'm not. But sometimes I just want to dance or drink a bit, you know, just get a bit loose, forget about the travel stress or whatever. But then, yeah, you just end up talking the whole time. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I know how that goes.
Yeah. Story of your life.
Yeah. So what about, like, I don't know if I asked you this last time or not, but maybe picked up new ones. Do you have any other hobbies or things that you kind of like to do to...
Yeah, I'm collecting stamps.
Yeah? Well, you know, I guess that's what you do when you get a little older. But.
No. Do I have hobbies? I really have to think about it. It's like, at the moment, I love to make tunes. It's pretty much my hobby.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't really have so much time. I mean, I always like, I go to the gym, but it's not really a hobby. It's...
And a necessity also, of sorts.
Yeah. But do I have hobbies? No, not really. I mean, I love to read. That's really something I do in my free time. Yeah. I'm eating up books.
I was an insane reader for the longest time. And then, honestly, when I moved to Berlin and started going out and having fun, I started reading a lot less.
Yeah.
But only in the last 6 months, I started going through all the, I bought a shitload of books. I just never read them. So now I've been reading them.
Okay.
I mean, there's nothing decent on TV or whatever anyway. So I'm like, this is a good way to have cool stories in my life, you know? So.
True, yeah.
I mean, you've been very accomplished. You've got the DJ career. You've got the record shop, record labels. You had studio projects before. Do you have, like, any other big aspirations?
I mean, now that I'm doing more tracks again, you know, because after the DJ kicks, I wanted to give it a bit more space. So I think what's really interesting for me also now is to know, but this is more on the business side, you know, to know what to collect and blah, 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 you know, when you do records, because, you know, it's your art, you know, you need to sign up with GEMA, you have to send them your list, you have to sign up your work and stuff. And it's a lot of stuff to collect. And I think that's something what I said in the beginning of the podcast, I think that, you know, I want to build like a big catalog of my own stuff, which I can maybe later, hopefully when I'm retired, still kind of have an income from. And now we did, I did a publishing company with my husband.
Okay.
And I think that's the next thing to... Because I see it when I sign stuff from other artists, especially when they're young, it's like, okay, are you signed up with some kind of collecting society? And they're like, what? I'm like, okay, I need to do this and that, because it potentially gets played at the radio, or what if you have a hit? You know, it's like, okay. And then it's like, you're collecting neighboring rights. No. You have publishing. No. And so that's something I see myself a bit more in the future to give kind of, how do you call it? It's maybe a bit... almost like consulting, you know, or just bring people on the right way to know what to collect. And also maybe also, I mean, I'm also not the best with contracts, but, you know, have a quick check on the contracts and see if they are tied to a label for the rest of their life, or, you know, because there's different kind of things. Some people might still want to fuck you over.
It's a common thread. That's what happens a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something I want to do. And also I want to really put more effort into the studio, you know, maybe do some kind of teaching videos. Or, I mean, I did a thing in Ibiza also with Steve Buck, which was really, really nice. I think it's called the Mix Masters. Yeah. So it was a week. People could book a place, and it was pretty much, you know, helping other people to produce. And it was really nice because I'm doing it on my own the whole time. And also after I quit my other job, it was the first time for me to be in a group again and have some almost something like office hours. So we started at 10, had a break at 1, and then continued until 6. And that was really nice because, there were so many talented people, and then giving them a few more tips and tricks, and they're like, true. Yeah, now it sounds like how I wanted it to sound. You know, that was really satisfying for me. So I think... And again, I think, like, I'm turning 44. Age doesn't play a role, but do I really want to travel that heavily when I'm 50, 55? Or you know, maybe,
I get it.
Yeah, we never know. So it's always good to think a little bit about the future. And I think I see myself more into that, you know, just helping other artists to get their music out or releasing the music, making hopefully the label a little bit bigger, or do some kind of teaching stuff, what a lot of other artists are also doing at the moment. I think it's something nice. It's something different, keeps your brain fresh. And
I'm into it for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, originally I was going to try to go to school to be a teacher, and then I just dropped out of college. So I like this aspect of it for sure.
Yeah.
And yeah, you brought up one thing earlier that I wanted to touch down on, is when you brought up publishing and whatever. It's really interesting because I also deal with this as a label, whatever, like all these people, like they don't have this, that, or whatever in a row, but then they'll go on Instagram or Twitter or whatever and be like, I hate Spotify, I'm not getting paid. And it's like, well, you have 80 monthly listeners, so that's not your problem. Stealing music, that's what do they call it, piracy, that's still a huge problem.
Yeah.
That nobody talks about anymore, because like, especially if you're a digital label or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the other aspect is all the easiest avenues for potential money that just it creates itself while you're sleeping. They don't even sign up for that.
Yeah. So true.
Granted, it's one of those things where it seems daunting, because it is, and there's a lot of big words in these contracts. You don't know where to start. So I think people having this option is a really nice thing. Didn't you do like a course here one night or something about taxes or something? Or
yeah, it was more about what to collect in GEMA, and we kind of wanted to bring a bit of clarification in this whole thing. And there was a lot of interest online, but then when we did it, I think 3 people showed up, which fair enough, you know, it's like, but yeah, a lot of people, they ask about, yeah, do it online, blah, blah, blah. So I think there is some interest. But also a lot of people, they don't really give a shit. And also, I mean, we know there's this great thing called a slice, which I think is really, really good.
Yeah.
But also on the other side is pretty much the work what GEMA has to do, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of. So I think...
Well, Zach started it because they weren't doing the work.
Yeah, you know? true. And it's really sad to see that you, as an artist, you get fucked over all the time, you know? It's really... But... As long as people don't know about it, so who's going to complain about it, you know?
Absolutely.
So, and I collect everything, and I think it's good to let people know a bit more about that, and that they also, when they also have labels, they also can collect stuff as labels, and also when it's stuff is played on Spotify, they get the Spotify money, but then also they get some more money even on top, you know?
For sure.
Yeah, so and I don't think people know about that.
I mean, I've definitely... let things fall through the cracks over the years, and I'm not like super on top of my stuff.
Yeah,
but I'm on top of it more than other producers that I seem to meet, because this last period I got some pretty incredible royalty checks, and during the pandemic they were actually keeping me afloat, and then they started to get a little less and a little less. I'm like, well, I'm impressed that it lasted that long. So I wasn't even mad. I'm just like, I guess that's that then. And then I got another banger check. I'm like, ooh, this is awesome. Yeah. But that's also because like I was really focused on keeping the catalog to, you know, a few core labels and not having to chase people and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then over time, because I put out so many records, that shit just kind of adds up.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people realize that, especially now everybody wants to do these 40-track, 40-artist compilations. Like, I don't want to say you're throwing music away, but in an essence, kind of are.
Yeah, it is. And then I'm also like, you know, people are complaining about Spotify, but it starts even on a smaller base, because some record labels, they wouldn't want to give you like even the most basic contract. I mean, what if your track blows up? You know, what if you secure a sync deal? You know, there's tons of money and you're just like, hey, yeah, just have... 5K, I don't need it, you know. So
And especially with the sync deals, like I mean, you know, I guess if you're doing like drummy techno stuff, you probably don't have to worry about that, but anything that might potentially end up on the radio and the movies or video game, it's worth it, because I just did a sync deal somewhat recently, and it didn't work out so well in my favor, because I didn't have my due diligence properly on all the paperwork, you know? Like, it's still cool that it happened, but I was like, I thought this was going to be a lot more lucrative.
true. But you never know. I mean, I saw how's it called, advertisement from a money exchange or something like that, some cool techno tracks, you know, so you never say no.
That's true. All the fashion people are doing that these days. Let's end this on a few funny questions here. Just because
we're getting way too serious, yeah. Last time was so much more fun when we were drunk, but I'm not sure if it was a cool idea to get drunk at 10 a.m. in the morning.
Well, I mean, it depends on who you ask if it's a cool idea. Actually, on the way here, I saw a guy, you know, because in Berlin, it's open carry. You can bring a bottle pretty much anywhere. And this guy was like walking down the street with a bottle at 10 a.m. And I was actually weighing that out in my head because it's like, a lot of people in life have been through some moment where they're not really a big drinker, but they're like, yeah, this is a moment where I'd like to have a drink at 10 in the morning. But then you realize when you look around Berlin, it's a lot of people that abuse that. And they're like, I need to have a drink at 10 in the morning, you know, and that's why it kind of becomes this trashy vibe.
Yeah.
But you like the idea of the freedom, you know what I mean? So
when that happens to me, like seeing someone, whatever, on a Tuesday, Wednesday, that early morning, I automatically think about which club was open last night, you know?
Oh, yeah. I saw that yesterday, actually, because the club over here was just getting out. And I was like, I wonder if they're coming from there or that's just fashion right now. Yeah. Anyway, what would you say is one of the worst jobs that you've had?
Yeah, someone asked me that question before, and I think... yeah, when I studied, I was giving out newspapers, and I remember I had this job, and it was in January, and when I had to do it, I think it was at Alexanderplatz, so I had to hand it out to people that were just passing by, and it started snowing so much. I think we had like the worst snow ever, and I was standing there, like no one would come around or passing by. I was like, okay, this is really the worst. But then I was like, okay, I never... You know, when it's too hard, I never give up. But then it was supposed to be 5 days, but then after 3 days, it was like, guys, I'm done, you know, this is shit. Because there was no one coming, it was snowing, I was cold as fuck. And I think that was really the worst. Oh, another thing was, oh my God, I'm not sure if I should say it, but I only did it for one day, it was too awkward. So I also, when I studied, you know, I did all these promo things, and then there was a company behind Ostbahnhof, they did some kind of, you know, when you see the advertisements after midnight in the TV and you could, and you have all these half naked ladies and they're like, write me. Oh, you can text me under 111 and blah, blah, blah.
Oh yeah, one of those.
Yeah. And then there was a company like, okay, we kind of answering those messages. And I'm like, okay, I mean, how bad can it be? And then I did one training. I was like, wow. Because there's people, of course, they're super lonely. And then you have to write them back and you're like, and they're like, oh, where are you? And I'm like, yeah, I'm half naked on the couch and I have long blonde hair and my name is Janine. And, you know, you need to try to have them write back. But then I felt so bad because it's super expensive. Like one text message is whatever, $2.50 or something. And then, of course, some people, they were like, yeah, I don't want to put my ring a ding dong in your whatever. And I was like, okay, no. So I did it for 8 hours. It was so awkward. And sometimes I was even blushing when I got a message. And I was like, oh my God, this is so horrible.
Yeah.
I think this was the most horrible thing I ever did in my life.
I get it. Understandable. Yeah. I have one friend. She actually manages the OnlyFans pages for these girls that she knows.
Yeah.
Because it turns out girls are not opposed to like being on OnlyFans, but they don't want to deal with all like the fucking freaky dudes and stuff. So she kind of like shields them and posts the stuff or whatever. And I've never asked her the stories yet, but I'm like, I want to know what's going on.
Yeah.
Man. You know, like to me, that's, it's just bizarre.
And I thought like living in Berlin, you saw everything or you heard everything, but so that was like fucking freaky. And I was like, wow, okay, crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm not trying to kink shame, but some people, you're just like, yikes.
You know? Yeah, like, right. I didn't even know you can do that.
Exactly. Wait, that's people are into that. Okay.
Okay.
You just do you.
Took notes and like, okay, I'm gonna try this at home.
Like, oh, I never thought of it that way.
Interesting.
What about worst tour stories?
Worst tour stories.
You get robbed or anything like that?
Luckily, I never got robbed, but I was once booked, I think, somewhere in the UK, and it was just, I don't know, I think it was the first party they did. So they picked me up. They put me in a youth hostel with three other people sleeping in the same room. And oh, then man. It was like, okay, this is weird. But I was also, you know, not super well known back in the days. And I was like, all right, this is weird. But yeah, okay, let's do it. And then, I don't know, the next day, because they all got a bit shit-faced, so they forgot to pick me up and bring me to the airport. And I think it was that long ago when we didn't really have smartphones, or I couldn't just, you know, call a number or something. So I had to go to reception, and then it was just a really weird thing. And then also they didn't have a proper DJ booth. So the DJ booth was so low, like my back would hurt. And yeah, it was just like a lot of really weird things, you know, and I was like, oh my God, thank God I'm back home. But yeah, luckily I never had any like weird things, you know, with like getting robbed or being fucked up, or the driver's fucked up, or
that's cool.
No, everything was pretty much, yeah, was pretty nice. Yeah,
but I would say, I mean, that of course that was a shit situation, but there's something to be said, like you kind of have to grind it out.
Yeah,
I think you should. Like I had to grind it out as well. Like you have to do a lot of these shitty gigs to really appreciate things when it comes around.
Yeah,
and again, I don't remember if we were talking about this on the podcast or if I was talking to a friend at home or something, but like the other part of it is a lot of people now, they kind of are able to ditch that sort of domestic or regional grind where they just kind of overnight, they're like, okay, now I have 17 festival gigs this season or whatever. And like, they're doing Blitz today and Printworks tomorrow or whatever. And you're like, all right, that's awesome. But then they don't realize that sometimes shit's going to get kind of gnarly because they're used to kind of being babied everywhere.
True. Yeah, sometimes it's funny when you see the videos and then they're like, oh, we have the driver and I have my own photographer and I have my own this and that. And it's like, yeah, it's nice and I'm happy you have it now, but you're missing out the work at the base, you know? It's like getting a proper fan base that are also there when it goes down a bit, maybe, you know?
Exactly. And it does. Yeah. Like, there's not a DJ you'll meet that has been around for decades and that they say they didn't have like a plateau or a valley before coming back up or something. But it's never always an increase, you know?
No, but I think it's normal. I think it can also be good, you know, because when it goes down, you can kind of re-innovate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But what was I going to say? Yeah, I have a friend. She's a bit more in the kind of makeup artist kind of thing. But she said it's everywhere. It's the same. You know, you have a lot of people, they think, oh, it's super glamorous. And you're from zero to hero. But you have to put some work in. And also, I think it's with acting. I saw an article with modeling. I think I saw an article in a newspaper. And they said, yeah, it's... Now they book a lot of influencers, but they don't have the background, especially for acting and stuff, and it gets all a bit like awkward, or even models have the attitude of a Naomi Campbell and they just had one picture out, you know. So I think it's the social media thing. It's you get a wrong picture of everything.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you believe that that's actually reality.
Yeah.
And it's not.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, someone said to me, I should not post pictures of my store, or you know, sometimes I do funny things and I'm like, okay, I just you know, cleaned the whole store and I love it, you know, but it's also part of the business, you know. You also have to keep your stuff clean. And someone said, yeah, don't post this on Instagram, it doesn't look like success. And I was like, yeah, but it's the reality, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be clean sometimes, you know.
And don't you want people to love you for you, sort of thing, you know?
Like, yeah, it's like,
I mean, record stores are not clean to be actually. This is a clean record store that I'm sitting in right now. Like, you go to a lot of these places and they're kind of, you know, smoky, nasty, whatever.
Yeah,
and
true. Yeah,
so I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, but you know, sometimes, especially when it's wet outside, you know, sometimes you need to,
of course,
wipe through, but it takes like 5 minutes, you know. And sometimes you make a funny picture. I had one where I brushed the floor in front of the shop. And I said, I care for you, but it was a bit of like a funny thing. Maybe only Germans understood, because care or kehren means, you know, brushing. And so I thought it was very funny. It got, you know, a lot of likes and stuff like that. So, and someone asked, oh, you cannot do this. It looks like you're not having success. It's like, I sell shitloads of records, you know.
Have you seen my schedule? I think I'm fine. That's kind of also what I do too, because some people are kind of surprised at like what I'll say or do. Sometimes I'm like,
yeah,
I've lived for fucking, how long have I been around now? I don't know. Well, I guess 15 plus years where I've just only lived off of music. I'm like, I think I can do or say, not do or say whatever I want, but like, I'm not going to like lose because I didn't fucking clean my studio or something.
You know,
let me ask you though, like, you're pretty open about being a mother and stuff like that. Yeah. So do they say the same thing, like, oh, you shouldn't show that you're a mother, or are they cool with it?
Yeah, they also said, I shouldn't show my daughter because I had the feeling they want me to be almost something like a prostitute, you know, or someone other people know, oh, yeah, she's free, we can fuck her, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I don't want to sell my body, I want to sell my music. And I was like, was pretty shocked, you know? I mean, nowadays it's a bit more common, or I mean, my daughter's turning 15, and then now see, you know, Ash Lauren, she had a baby, then I think Jada G just announced she's pregnant, and some other people that have kids, and it's now a bit more accepted in the scene, I think. Yeah, and I think no one would ever tell them something, you know, like
yeah,
this.
Yeah, because I think at a point that was kind of an ordeal. I heard that from women that either had babies or they're like, I'm about to or whatever.
Yeah,
and that was kind of disappointing, you know, because like, to me, it's just like the most natural thing to have kids, of course. And it's like, okay, so let's think about it for a minute.
Yeah.
Like your audience, women understand that women have babies better than anybody.
Yeah, true.
So who are you really worried about? Men. Okay, well, so you're worried about these guys that no longer think that you're, for lack of better wording, like free or fuckable or something.
Yeah.
Like, is that the people you really want at your shows anyway? you know what I mean? Like, so I've always just been like, nah, embrace it. Like, that's part of life.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's super cool. You know, even it was a bit hard in the beginning, but, you know, now she's now finding her own music taste. I mean, it's a bit unlucky she's into K-pop. I'm not sure how this happened. But there's also this one K-pop band called New Jeans, and they do some more like, it's almost like UK Garage two-step kind of stuff. And I'm like, and even I like it, you know, I was like, this is cool. And I was like, yeah, let's go to the studio. And she was like, what are we doing? I'm like, yeah, let's try to do something like this. And she's like, I think I would like that, you know? And so now it's for the first time, she's going to come with me in school holidays. Yeah. I think it's going to be fun to teach her all the stuff.
You should. And then you should also hit up that site and be like, make some K-pop stuff, the AI thing, and sample that.
Oh, yeah, true. Because she was like, but we cannot sing in Korean. I was like, yeah, but there's websites where you can, you know, have
some. There you go. I'll give you a link.
Yeah, nice. K-pop album coming soon.
There you go. It's the money time, money train.
Yeah.
So we can roll out here soon enough. But what I wanted to see is like what people should look out for the rest of the summer. You said you have a record coming out this end of this month.
Yeah. End July. Of this month. Yeah. Then I have a couple of remixes coming out. I just remixed, a track from the great, DJ Rolando.
Awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. And he just approved it yesterday. So I'm a bit proud. Yeah. It's also fantastic. A bit like, I would call it a bit more dub techno. So something people wouldn't really expect from me, but it was just how the original was. It would fit more than a hands up house track. Yeah. Then what else is coming to play? Of course, a couple of shows, which is nice. And then there's another EP coming on Oz Music at the end of the year. And then, yeah, just trying to keep busy. And as I said, yeah, it's, I don't know, at the moment, it's, I feel really, really confident in the studio. And yeah, just having tons of tracks coming out.
Excellent. And what about live DJ sets? Like, what would you recommend people go check out, you know, on YouTube or SoundCloud or whatever?
Yeah, I think SoundCloud is good. I just uploaded some stuff. Actually, I want to record more DJ mixes. I think I lost it a little bit, you know, because back in the days when, I don't know, it was always so exciting to do DJ mixes with the latest records. But then now when you start playing so often, you lose it a bit. I think I want to do this a bit more often, you know, just putting together what's new in the shop maybe and what I currently play, I think could be nice. Yeah, but SoundCloud, YouTube is usually the thing, yeah.
Okay, so check that out if you want to find out anything from her. On my end, I have a new record out with Zippo this week. Oh, I love Sobel. Last week. Yeah, he's a good dude.
He is good, yeah.
Happy birthday to him. He just entered the Dirty 30.
Oh my God.
I went to his birthday last week, had some amazing wine, but had to leave because I was having too much wine. It didn't become a problem, but it could have.
One of those nights.
Yeah. So that record's out. It's called Tools for Levitation. I'm in Chicago, July 12th, smoking mirrors. That'll be fun. And then at the end of the month, of course, there's the Great Beyond. So that'll be good. Yeah, you
That's
play there.
That's always around my birthday. I remember now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because my birthday's 29th. Yeah. Yeah, true. Last time I had a birthday in Amsterdam and then flew over with my daughter.
With your daughter, yeah.
It was funny. I think she didn't like it at all.
She was not into it. But no. That's fine. I didn't want anything to do with what my parents were doing at that point.
Yeah, that's true.
So.
But she came to, we went to San Francisco and she loved it. She was like, Mom, I think one day I'm going to move to San Francisco. And I was like, okay, have fun saving up the coins for that.
Yeah, exactly. You could afford 1 month's rent if you start saving now.
Here's your tent.
Exactly.
Oh my God, yeah.
Aside from that, I got some European dates. I'll announce that down the road. For Cynthia's schedule, just check out Instagram. Seems like you're on the road every weekend, right?
Yeah, true. I put it on Instagram, but it's also pretty much up to date on Resident Advisor. And also there's a thing called Songkick, I think. Mm-hmm. It's also, we always update it, so it's...
Okay.
Pretty much there, yeah.
Well, thanks again for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me again.
I'll see you. Actually, shit, you, when this comes out, you will possibly still be playing at Panorama Bar.
Oh, yeah, it's coming out on Monday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's closing the club this weekend. Yeah. It also happens to be my birthday, so who knows? Maybe we'll both be still at the club when
this comes out. Maybe this episode is coming out on
Maybe
Tuesday.
Maybe there'll be a bonus episode after the club. I don't know.
That's just a proper train wreck.
It should have did it right after that. Oh my God.
We should have done. Okay. But maybe that could have been a career end for either you or me.
Yeah, for sure. So, all right. Have a good one.
Yeah. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.